Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire, and this is the official Lions podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. Eric, not much happening with the Lions this week. They're gearing up for training camp. There's really no additions or subtractions to make note of.
And, yeah, correct.
And last week, we started with our offensive training camp series. Yeah, heading into training camp talk. Today, we may have mentioned that we were going to defense. We're going to hold off on that till next week because we got an overflowing mailbag, you know. Got a big mail delivery, so we're going to go through some questions today.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a good time ahead of the 4th of July holiday to give back to, you know, a lot, you know, the fans are going to have a chance to maybe listen to us on the 4th or sitting around or something like that, relaxing. So it's a good time to answer some of their questions, and we'll put our agenda a week from now.
I'm starting my 4th of July early. I'm looking out the podcast studio window, and nice. I see a unicorn floating around.
Yeah, I still get my articles in, but I'm spending more and more time with my kids in that pool. I did take a ride on that unicorn in the pool earlier today, just floating around.
Sure, it was very magical. The first question comes from Ethan Wegeler. Everyone says the Lions are going away from the league and focusing on the run, but I've heard the same about at least a dozen other teams this year. In fact, I believe the league is pulling a fast one on us and going away from the pass. All right. I think the way the Patriots won the Super Bowl and the way the Rams crumbled down the stretch was telling. All right, well, there's truth in that. Most notable teams are going run heavy to disguise the pass. Patriots, Rams, Cowboys, Eagles, Saints, and others. Thoughts?
You know, I think there's some validity to that, but I think the league has always been run-focused, but I do still think that most teams are heading towards the pass when they can. I think fan bases and a lot of the younger coaches nowadays would rather have a McVay-type offense than they would a Daryl Bevel-type offense. But, you know, oftentimes, the teams that are winning are the ones that are zigging when the rest of the league is zagging, right? And so when you can go against the grain, you typically are afforded opportunities. Now, we've talked multiple times how it's a copycat league, right? And the teams will often mimic what they see, and mimicking Sean McVay is going to be very popular. The problem is that it's a very challenging thing to do because you have an elite coach in Sean McVay, and then you have some nice weapons, and it wasn't like this just happened overnight. They've been building towards this. So the teams that you mentioned, that Ethan mentioned here, like the Patriots and the Saints and the Eagles, these teams have always been very balanced teams. They've always been able to run. They've always been able to pass and do them both well. The Cowboys and the Rams both have elite running backs, right? And Gurley and Ezekiel Elliott, right? So those teams tend to be more favorited towards the running game because they have, that's where their skill positions are heavier, right? So I do think it's still a passing league. I do think the league is still heading towards a passing league, but I think more teams want that balance than what's talked about. I do think that the run is always going to be important, especially if you have a McVay-type offense. The run is always going to be an important factor in the NFL. That's just the way the league is designed. But I just don't think it's talked about as often as the passing game is, because the passing game is exciting, and it there's a marketing value to that.
Well, the passing game changed the league. It started way back in the AFL in the 1960s, and certain continue to this day as ratings keep going up and up and up and up, except for 2016 for many different reasons. One thing that we're able to do on this podcast is we've been looking at trends over the years, and it just helps you remember them. And I know over the last two playoffs, most importantly, stopping the run is a big deal when it comes to the playoffs. And in the last 2 years, 9 out of the 12 playoff teams were top 10 or top 12 run defenses. And conversely, teams that can run the ball also found themselves in the playoffs more often than not. I think it was like 7 and 8 of the top 10 running teams in the last 2 years also made the playoffs. So, you know, that's a rather high percentage on both sides of the ball. So running has always been important. I know, yeah, we emphasize the pass because it's a lot more exciting and people want to see the pass. And a bunch of these teams that are mentioned, especially the Saints and the Patriots and even the Rams, although Goff did crumble in the Super Bowl, they were elite passing teams. Mm-hmm. They passed the ball a lot as well. So, yeah, the run game's very important. And, you know, Lions just need to establish an identity. Mm-hmm. You know, you could say we're going to be a team that runs the ball. Well, they have to just become a team that runs the ball and supports it with the pass. And we'll see what happens from there.
I think while the Lions are focused on running and they're talking about running more, I don't think that means that they're going to be shying away from the pass by any means. I still think they're going to take shots. They've put weapons in place that they want. I don't think it's going to be... I don't think they're going to approach a Saints level of offense where they're going to be throwing the ball, you know, possibly for 5,000 yards. But I think Stafford 4,000 yards is easy in this style of offense.
And it's only 250 yards per game.
Right. I mean, and I don't think that's out of the realm. I think there's going to be games when he throws over 300, and I think there's going to be games where he throws for 200. They want their offense to be like their defense. They want it to be adaptable, right? And so we'll see where it goes. In my mind, I think it's just we're just not used to it. And
used to it the whole 90s.
No, I mean, that's true. Well, since then, I guess, the last decade and a half, we really haven't heard or haven't really been
really
successful.
Really more a solid 2 decades.
Exactly, right? And so... I still think it's a passing league, but like you said, in the playoffs, the running teams find success in the playoffs, and it's almost like you need a passing game to get to the playoffs, and then once you're in the playoffs, you need a running game to win, right? And so, from an offensive standpoint, anyways.
All right, Ethan's got one more question. He led up with a good one. Let's see how number two goes. Any history on how much defense can change year to year? Packers had a terrible defense, and I find it hard to stomach that with the same personnel, they can improve dramatically.
Yeah, you know...
Best example, not this past year's Jacksonville Jaguars, but 2 years ago. But that is not same personnel, like he mentions. They spent a ton of money in free agency.
Yeah.
And they drafted Jalen Ramsey.
A couple high draft picks in the years prior to Ramsey as well. It tends to not be an overnight thing. Right. On offense, you can turn an overnight success story. You know,
all you got to do is sign Kurt Warner to be your backup QB.
Or your starter, I guess, really.
Well, Trent Green went down.
Right.
That's when he stepped in.
Right. But I think defense is harder to adjust to. It takes time for the defense to improve. I'm not sold on the Packers. I mean, their defense right now. I still think they have massive troubles in their secondary. They've improved some by adding new talent there. They've improved some up in their front seven by adding new talent there. But I think the Packers probably have the worst defense in the NFC North. And I really don't think it's even that big of an argument. But... You know, I think the longer you stay with one system, the better it works. And, you know, whenever you can stack those things on top of each other, there's always a chance for improvement. But I don't an overnight success story for them would be hard to come by. I Packers are probably going to have to shootouts with people to win these games.
So it's going to be a fun team to watch next year.
Which they're capable of, though, yeah.
Yeah, they can survive that way.
Sure.
Yeah, I guess I agree with you here. Although the Packers always surprised me. They in the past they've had very good personnel development, but maybe that's changing. And I really hope it is, but we'll see it when it happens.
Well, you know, that secondary is rough. They got they just keep trying to add guys in there, and maybe they'll improve by just existing. But I'm concerned.
Sometimes they coach him up, Eric, and it works out.
Yeah, that's
moving on. Moving on. Brian Kress. Was the plan for Ragnow based on the Patriots model who cross-trained their offensive linemen, or simply giving the rookie a year at a quote-unquote easier spot?
I don't think they wanted to overwhelm him. I think it actually probably would have been easier for Ragnow to go from a college center right into the center spot. I don't think they were ready to move Graham off of center because he had a couple of successful seasons at center, and I don't think they were ready to move him. I think they wanted to. You got to remember, center's a hard spot, right? In the NFL, you've got to make calls, you got to make adjustments, and I think it's a lot for a rookie to come in and put on their plate. For the Lions, I think with Ragnow, they had an opening at left guard. It made easy sense to just keep things at center and left tackle and right tackle the same, or even right guard the same, and just kind of slot him in there and not put too much on his plate and just allow him. Like I said, maybe it's an easier path. And so, I think center is probably his long term, and that's why he was drafted to be a center. Personally, I like Ragnow better at guard and Graham at center, but I'm not making the calls, and I think you can have success either way, realistically.
In other words, although this is a podcast, so you got to talk about it, you agree with Brian Criss? I know you don't want to oversimplify it like that, but it's a general agreement with this statement.
Yeah, I think, yeah, they didn't want to shake the boat up too much, and making life easier on him in that year one makes a lot of sense. I think that was part of it, yeah.
Walker Kelly asked, do you think Tease Tabor is going to be better, or is this just a camp story? Well, that's how I feel. You know, well, I'll believe it when I see it. He's still slow. And is he fast now all of a sudden?
Well, you can come across faster when you can make better anticipation.
Think properly.
Correct. And
is it enough for Tease?
Well, that's the question, right? The same story that I've heard from everyone who has not seen Tease play is, I'll believe it when I see it. That's exactly the line that you use. And that is I've heard it from 24 people on social media and in public. And it's a very reasonable and
sure, we have a long tradition of it. Dwayne Johnson.
Well, I mean,
Brandon Powell. There's a bunch of names from pre-camp. Okay, this guy looks great. You know, blah blah blah. We're going to see tons out of him, and they don't really make it.
But I don't think that's what's. I don't think that's what's happening with Tease here. I understand I haven't seen it, so I don't want to believe it because he's had 2 years of struggles and I got to see it with my own eyes type of thing. I get that. Well, I've seen it with my own eyes, all right? I've been there. I've been fortunate enough to get eyes on what is being reported, including being reported by me. He looks better. Now, does that mean he's a starter? No. Does that mean he's going to step into a third cornerback role? I think there's potential for that. I don't know if that's going to happen, but he looks better than he has in the past. And that's really all that I think most of us are saying is he looks improved. Now, is it enough? We'll find out. I mean, training camp and put the pads on, it's a totally different story. But so far, he looks better, and that's really all you can ask. So, in my mind, it's a good camp story because he looks improved, as opposed to people generating that he looks improved to make because that's the storyline they want to sell. It's a good story, yes, but he's shown better instincts, he's shown more awareness, and those things can offset some of the physical areas in which he struggles.
All right, Blake Berry asks, is it possible to play three safeties and three corners? If so, how often could we see that? It is legal to play three safeties and three corners. I can comfortably say that.
I actually think we'll see it more than what people are anticipating. There's still going to be a 5-DB secondary, and that's still going to be their base, and that's where they're going to want to live most of the time. But in obvious passing situations, when the Lions have the lead, if it's like third and like very long, these are all there's going to be situations where it's going to be advantageous to put three of them out there at the same time. You're paying Justin Coleman to be out there all the time, and we still don't exactly know what his role is going to be. They've said it's going to be nickel. It makes sense for it to be nickel. When they do want just two corners, it's very possible he slides to the outside cornerback spot. He has that range. But I think they're going to try and keep those three nickels or those three corners on the field as much as they can. The offset of that is that they've got three returning safeties. They spent a third-round pick on a safety. They're not just doing this for depth. Like, there's a plan for these safeties. So they're going to want to get these three safeties out there as well. So when you're paying three corners and you're investing in three safeties, there's going to be opportunities and there's a plan and there's a path for them to put all six guys out there at the same time. And you can get away with it by, you know, just altering the guys that are in front. You know, you can chop down a linebacker to put a safety, and they have safeties you can put in the box. You can eliminate slower defensive tackles to put more edge guys, and then you move the linebackers up. And when you move the linebackers up, the safeties can fill in behind. So there's a lot of variations on how you can do it, but I definitely think it's going to be something that we'll see more than I think most are anticipating at this point.
All right, Bruce Walker asks, aside from OTAs and minicamp appearing to run more smoothly because vets know what to expect now, what are some of the biggest changes that you have observed in the team as compared to last year?
It's a hard question because, like I said, you don't have pads on right now, or didn't have pads on in OTAs and minicamp, and so you can't really get a good feel for the offensive line or the defensive line or the running game for that matter. It's mostly just executing game plans and, trying to like make sure your routes are on, your timing's on, and how do you match up in coverage. Those are the main focuses. From a practice point of view, the changes I've seen is they're utilizing the on-field screen more. They're using that as a teaching tool, whereas last training camp it was just kind of there and it was
on-field screen.
They have a big on-field
television.
Yeah,
replay what just happened.
Yes, exactly. The last practice before break, they did a lot of special teams work. And so when they would do a 7-on-7, or I'm sorry, or an 11-on-11, they would then cut to a special teams play. And when that happened, the offensive line would move over in front of one of those screens, and they would run back the 11-on-11s, and the offensive line would watch what they were doing, and the coaches would pause it, and they would talk, and they were talking to the offensive lineman about how to make adjustments. And then when that special teams practice session was over, they went right back to 11-on-11s to put into practice immediately the changes. And so they were making these adjustments on the field. And last year, the screens were just kind of there. They seemed to be utilizing them a lot more frequently this year. So from a practice standpoint, that was one of the bigger changes, is the coaching aspect of how they're getting more opportunities to coach up on the field. From a scheme, I guess, standpoint, there's not a whole lot I can talk about. I can just tell you that the defense, the personnel that they've added to the defense this year will allow them to expand their multiplicity looks. Like before, they were limited in how they could utilize certain players. Now that they've added guys like Trey Flowers, Jelani Tavai, Justin Coleman, that will allow other people to be more hybrid players and play different spots, and they can adjust and disguise and do it. So there's a lot more cool things that I think can happen on defense. On offense, we're still kind of figuring it all out, except the fact that we'll see a lot more tight ends than we have in the past.
We're inching closer to the on-field lighting up. We saw the fake Oregon tweet a few years ago where they had the light up field. Mm-hmm. I believe they have some basketball courts like this now too. But one day you're going to go to your OTAs, They're going to get on the field, and then the field's going to light up. They're going to run a passing play. It's going to have everybody's routes highlighted so everybody knows where to go for practice. That does set up the cheating aspect where other teams are going to be flying drones over the field to, like, record all their plays. Maybe for, like, or they commission...
100%.
Yeah, commission spy satellites to start, like, watching what's going on from way up above. You know, you can buy time to broadcast off or to receive broadcasts from them. All right, next question is from Brett Hughes. Who do you think are the three breakout players that will make an impact this year? I bet one of them you won't say is Tease Tabor. You won't commit to it.
No, I wouldn't.
You don't have to go wild defending yourself.
No.
I was just calling it.
I want you to think about this as well. So let's take a glance at the roster here and see who you think might be.
Do you have your three, or do you want me to go first?
I'm actually still looking, but because it's a very broad question. Like,
well, this is tough too. Like, because who can really break out?
Right.
Who's these? It's insanely. There is some turnover to the roster, but a lot of the guys who are expected to do something were doing something last year. The young player, you know, like Kerryon Johnson can't be a breakout player this year because you could say he was a breakout player last year.
Now, let me...
And he was the second round draft
pick. Well, let me riddle you this then. Kenny Golladay last year had a 1,000-yard season.
So would breakout for him be 1,500 yards?
Reggie Wayne wrote an article that said Kenny Golladay will be a breakout wide receiver this year. And he said that 1,300 yards is realistic. Now, he had 1,000 yards last year. And so is going from 1,000 yards to 1,200 to 1,300 a breakout? Like, that's the thing, is I think Reggie was talking about more on, like, a national stage. Like, people are going to actually recognize him as a number one. And I think there's more to it. But... I had people complain that how can he really break out if he's already had a 1,000-yard season, yet he's being called a breakout player at NFL.com by Reggie Wayne, right? I mean, he's potentially Hall of Fame bound Reggie Wayne, right? So
it's weird because we can't say, Sam Martin can't be a breakout player because he broke out before and then he's terrible.
But he could be a comeback player.
He could be a comeback player.
Right.
I'm just trying to think of...
All right, breakout player. I can give you one right off the top.
I can give you... Well, Frank Ragnow is going to be your number one breakout player, I guess, because he could really like emerge as one of the main anchors of the NFL, not in a negative way.
No, I am looking at the same draft, and I would say Tracy Walker. He was...
Well, that is your guy. Yeah. Okay, I can buy that as being a possibility.
Limited role last year, only saw like 40% of the snaps, and that built from a lower percentage earlier in the season. Now he's expected to take a full-time role where he's probably going to be on the field almost 100% of the time. That would be a breakout, right? Because that's going from a smaller scale to a much larger scale. So I can give you that one right off the bat.
What about Deshaun Hand? Does he have breakout ability?
I don't think he is, because he was in the Defensive Rookie of the Year discussion before he got hurt.
Well, what if he becomes like a Pro Bowl level? Is that not breakout?
That's the same. In my mind, that's the same level. I think he could easily jump up in there. I mean... It's really hard to say. It all depends on how you define breakout.
My dream breakout player would be Jared Davis.
Oh, you absolutely.
It's probably not going to happen, but if I could pick a guy,
that would
be the breakout player. Mm-hmm. If I decreed who the breakout player would be,
I mean, you can't really use rookies because they can't break out.
I guess they could, coming onto the scene. What if Travis Fulgham has a 1,000-yard receiving season? Oh, well, then that's a breakout player. It's not going to happen. Right. I'm just saying as an example.
Well, then if we're going to allow rookies, I'll say Jelani Tavai.
So you really think he's going to break out? He's going to have a huge season.
I think he's going
Madden
to be...
Madden only has him as a 66.
I think he will be a catalyst to what they want to do. He may not ever start this year.
He could be a breakout player if you don't
because
start.
He could be a guy who gets 8 to 10 sacks.
And I guess your argument against me is my argument. What does it even matter who's the starting lineup is?
Right. And look, Deshaun Hand might not be in the starting lineup, quote-unquote. You know what I mean? But, like, he could be a Pro Bowl player. He has that potential. But if you run a Trey Flowers, Damon Harrison, and then you start A'shaun Robinson, Hand could still be play at that level, but not technically be a starter. So with this defense, you don't have to be a starter to be a breakout player, in my mind. I like Walker. I like Tavai. You said Ragnow. You said Jared Davis. I mean, that's four. You want to add
no,
one more guy?
No, that's fine. No, I think good? That just goes to show it's tough.
Yeah.
That there's not a lot of candidates here.
Yeah, because I think they are what they are, and the guys that they added, I think the guys that they added are known commodities. You know what you're getting out of Amendola, you know what you're getting out of Trey Flowers, you know what the expectations are high for Hockenson, right? So I think I think the guys that they had in place last year are still in place for a reason. So. I don't know. I don't know if there is necessarily somebody. I don't think I could add necessarily another guy.
All right. Moving on. Sorry, Britt. Hail Mary and Bada Bing, Bada Boom ask similar questions. How much cap space is left and will it be spent on contract extensions, acquisition of free agents throughout the season, or a combination of both?
Yeah,
it's going to be both.
Yeah. Okay, so right now they have just over $23 million. Okay, that's, I think, ninth most in the league, which is a nice spot.
What's the number? Do you remember?
The highest?
Yeah.
Oh, not off the top of my head. I could look it up.
Is it like 70 million?
Oh, no, I don't think it's that. I think it's probably 40.
I wouldn't be surprised. There's a salary floor,
yeah,
so.
There's a lot of guys, there's a lot of teams that are still in decent shape. I mean, there's, like I said, at least eight have more than 23, so. But they're in a... There's off seasons where we didn't go in with $23 million. You know what I mean? So $23 million is a really nice spot. Quinn usually allocates 7 or 8 for in-season acquisitions. So right off the bat, you're still left with $15 million just without even having to touch it. And then you have a couple contracts that you're looking at extending, like Graham Glasgow, who I have written about. And we talked about him on the last podcast, what I expect his contract to be. I'm expecting him to average, like I said, roughly $8 to $8.5 million a year. And then depending on the years, that will fluctuate with how much is guaranteed. But because he's still on his rookie deal, they can actually just push that money forward and not really impact this year's cap at all. With even if they give him an extension. A'shaun Robinson, I think, is due for money. It'll be interesting to see what they do with him, with Deshaun Hand waiting in the wings. But it's a really, if Damon Harrison becomes a problem and he's holding out and he wants more money and they're not willing to give it to him, they may just extend A'shaun and say, all right, well, A'shaun's the one that is, going to be more in our long-term future, and they may invest in him. I still think they can invest in Damon Harrison. I still think that they can invest in Slay. And so, I think, there's four contracts right there that I think they can make some adjustments on. I don't think there's a big target out there that they're, going after or they're, saving money for. I know we're going to – did we get a question?
I think it's next.
I'll hold off on that, but – I think contract extensions are in the works. I think leaving money available is in the works. But I'm also anticipating that a lot of this money, they're hoping that they can roll over into next season when contracts go up a bit again. So they'd like to have a higher cap ceiling next season.
Next question is from Svi the Mikhailik, which is some good Kansas Jayhawk imagery, actually Detroit Piston imagery.
Nice.
You think there's anyone left on the market they may go after? Tomata Pekko talks, Trey Boston's available, etc. Or are they saving everything for an extension?
Yeah, okay. I just can't answer that extension part. I mean, the Pekko talks make some sense to me.
Can't believe he's still playing.
They also have Johnny.
It was just 14 years ago. He's rumbling down the sidelines against Michigan in a valiant loss at Spartan Stadium in like 2006. That wouldn't be 14 years ago, and that'd be 13.
He can still play too. He's not a bad player. He's a reserve, I think, at this point. He made a fair amount of money last year. So, you know, he's an interesting guy. They have three backup nose tackles behind Harrison, and that I think they're hoping can take a next step and develop into a rotational player. But if they don't think any of those three guys are good enough to take a next step at this point, adding a guy like Pecco makes sense. When you look at the roster, they seem pretty content with the guys that they have at all their different spots. And so I'm not really sure. You know, you've either added a veteran or you have a rookie that's developing at a spot. So I don't know if there's really a spot where they're like, hey, this is where we have to improve a guy. You know, the weakest spot is probably outside corner, which, again, I know we just talked and said Tease is doing well. Mike Ford played some last year. You drafted Oruwariye, who we believe has a high ceiling. You brought back Cooper. You signed Melvin. And that's a lot of guys, but none of them are a surefire starter. But then you brought in Coleman, who could see snaps outside potentially. So I don't know. I don't know if there's really a spot. I mean, he mentioned Trey Boston. Boston is a big name, and I think you could bring him in, but he would be expecting to contend for a starting role, and I don't know where you put him. Are you going to upgrade? Are you going to put him in over Tavon Wilson when basically Tavon Wilson is there to train Will Harris, and you just spent a third-round pick on Will Harris? Are you going to use a one-year rental on Trey Boston, because Boston only signs one-year contracts every year because he likes this ability to be a free agent? So I don't know. I just don't see a lot of room right now, based on the current structure. Pecco seems to make the most sense, but I'd like to see maybe an offensive guard. But again, who's out? There's not really anybody out there that's going to improve on what they have on the existing roster. So I don't know. I don't know if you have anybody in mind or.
Well, no. What value is there on the market?
Right. There's just not. I mean, like, there's.
And I'm sure somebody will get signed by someone and he's going to be a starter and why didn't the Lions go get this guy? But it's not obvious right now.
Right.
Next question is from Big Dom. Big Dom asks, do you see any trades that could be targets as the Lions have a ton of cap space? I know where it starts, Patrick Peterson.
But he's suspended, right? And so that could lower his price down.
Yeah, exactly. So somebody's going to trade like a fourth round pick for him.
I don't think
everybody's going to be really angry about it.
I don't think Arizona would give up that.
I wouldn't think so. But just wait. Something stupid will happen like that.
It's always hard to figure out the trades right now. Things get a little bit clearer as camp rolls around, mid August, late August. You start seeing guys that are kind of on the outs with their teams, and then you can start looking at trades. But right now, I don't think anybody jumps out to me. I mean, Peterson, you mentioned, but I can't think of any other guys like that.
You're going to have to watch the combined practice with the New England Patriots and see if Quinn and some of his guys are standing off to the side, like really staring at one of the New England players, because then you know they'll make the trade for him.
Well, look at last year.
Trade picks.
They got a first-hand look at Damon Harrison and Romeo Okwara with the Giants. Both. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. So I would expect to see that again,
mm-hmm.
especially since it's the Patriots.
Yeah, and then you look at Houston, too. You could have some cast-off in Houston maybe that fits, too.
The Bill O'Brien program.
Yep.
Ties to the Pats. All right, Gloria's daughter asks, who do you think is a bigger off-season priority, Slay or Snacks? This is in the case that they can only afford one. Harrison's demand can't be a surprise to Quinn, but Slay's might have been.
I think they can afford to give both of them money. I don't think it's a pick one or the other. But in her scenario, she asks, if you had to pick one, who would you favor? I would favor Slay. I think Slay is more important to what this defense wants to do. I love Harrison. I think he transformed this defense, and I think the defense would struggle without him in there, but I think the secondary would be very problematic without Darius Slay, and I think that's why Slay has a little bit of leverage in this situation. I think Harrison probably deserves his bump a little bit more than Slay does, or at least a shift in guaranteed money a little bit more than Slay does. But for what they want to do, having a guy like Slay really can make this defense. If you're missing him, you're in trouble.
Now, I see this as a very interesting question.
Yeah.
They're both at an age where they're at the tipping point. Mm-hmm. Usually they start sliding down after this time, and so giving either of them a lot of money might be problematic in the long term. When you look at the league itself as a whole, they're looking to sign, you know, there's talks about signing Domantas Pecco. Mm-hmm. So who is a 34-year-old nose tackle?
Something like that,
and
yeah.
Vince Wilfork was a very old nose tackle.
Mm-hmm.
I can see him. He's our last nose tackle.
Sly Williams?
Athletic from the Ravens.
Oh,
See, now you can't think of his name either.
He
was a great player. He's a Hall of Fame level player. This is very embarrassing for us.
I keep wanting to say Nauta, but it's Nada.
Yeah, Haloti Nada.
Haloti Nada. Cheese and Pete's.
We should probably suspend our account from putting a podcast in. So Haloti Nada, guys
right.
like that. There, oddly enough, is a greater track record of well-aging nose tackles
sure.
or big defensive tackles than there are of corners.
Mm-hmm.
We remember the famous ones, Daryl Green, your favorite, Charles Woodson, even Rod
Champ
Woodson
Bailey.
When he moves to safety. Who did you just say?
Champ Bailey.
Yeah, Champ Bailey. So there are a handful of those guys too. But in the shorter term, in this era of the league, it seems that big, old defensive tackles somehow, even though you'd think their health would be falling apart at
mm-hmm.
that point in their lives or start to, you know,
mm-hmm.
in their mid to late 30s, they seem to have more hanging around power than cornerbacks
sure.
do. So my feeling would, if they had to choose one or if they were going to choose one, it would be Harrison. And although I am a very sentimental sports fan and would probably like to see both of them, I like to keep the band together, even though it might be for too long.
Mm-hmm.
I would think the most prudent thing to do would be to let both go, because especially if they're going to get too much money. Now, if you're going to get a deal and you're going to get value out of both of them if you can re-sign them, but it seems like they're both going to be in line for rather large contracts.
Well,
and maybe at that time it's time to say so long.
The thing with Harrison is his contract would be bigger if the Giants didn't trade him, because there still would have been a signing bonus attached to his base salary, right? So the Lions are only paying $7 million for him. Actually,
yeah. Well, we're not talking about their current contract,
right?
Talking about their next contract.
But yeah, but I guess what Snacks is saying is I'm worth more than $7 million.
He's wrong, and he's right.
Yeah, but the thing is if he was still on the Giants, he'd be making $10 million. Because the Giants had a bonus that they had to pay him. And so, realistically, I think part of the reason that Quinn acquired him was because he was going to be making $7 million,
yeah,
right?
Certainty.
Now, also, none of Harrison's contract is guaranteed. And so I think there's a deal that can be made where you can say, look, I like that $7 million.
I'll give you guaranteed money this year.
I like that $7 million. How about we just fully guarantee that $7 million? And how will that make you happy? Or maybe we guarantee $4 million this year, we guarantee $4 million next year. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's a way that they can keep the number down for the next couple of years and just give him more money, more assurances. I think you can get away with that with Harrison. With Slay, you're gonna have to convert money. And I think if they were up against the cap, there would be more incentive to sign Slay because he has such a high cap number this year. But they don't. There's no reason for them to really want to touch base.
Stop.
Okay.
Next question from Gloria's daughter.
Okay.
Is it setting a bad precedent to negotiate with Slay with 2 years left?
Okay. So personally, I don't think it is, and here's why.
But you were just about to say that it is.
No, I'm just okay.
I'm incorrect.
Okay. I'm saying there's not a reason to negotiate with Slay right now. You don't have to. They don't have to at all. There's no reason for them to need to. But I would still be inclined to negotiate with him. I would still be inclined to say, okay, what is it that you're looking for? How can we shift money around? Maybe we just give you more guarantees. What is it that you're looking for? If he's looking for like a hefty bump in pay, I don't think you necessarily need to go down that route. I think if you're talking about shifting money and stuff, again, that's something that's a little bit more palatable. Now, does it set a bad precedence to negotiate with either of these guys with two years left on their contract? I don't think it is. And the reason that I don't think it is because if you've ever followed one of my roster stacks, where I stack the roster based on importance, how important the player is, I always have an impact player section. And in the Lions impact player section, there are seven guys who I think are so important to the Lions that you could negotiate with them early and it wouldn't set a bad precedence because these are your superstars.
More than core players.
Yes, more than core. So Harrison and Slay are both in that section for me. They're two of the seven most important players on this roster, in my opinion. Stafford is one. He's got a big deal in the middle of it. You're not worried about him. Kerryon Johnson and Kenny Golladay are in rookie contracts. Those are my other guys. Trey Flowers, you just signed to a deal. Then you have Harrison and Slay, who are asking for more money. And then the last guy in my impact section is Quandre Diggs, who realistically is also underpaid. But he just got an extension last camp. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Quandre go through a similar situation next offseason where he wants a new deal. And again, it's fine because of his importance to the rest of the team. I'm not renegotiating with Marvin Jones, even though he's probably a core player, but he's not an impact player. For a guy like Slay and Harrison that are impact players, you can keep those relations positive. Look, this is an organization that has a history of not having positive player organization relationships, right? But if you can do that with your current superstars, I think it sets a tone that you're taking care of your better players, and it gives the other guys incentives to want to be better. And I don't think you're necessary. The precedence that you're setting is, if you're an elite player, we'll take care of you. If you're not an elite player, well, become an elite player, and then we'll take care of you. You know what I mean? I think that's the precedence.
All right, next question's from DC, Waz, and Atlas, because they have similar questions. Are there any players in the upcoming NFL supplemental draft who we should keep an eye on as possible Lions targets?
The big guy in this supplemental draft this year is Jalen Thompson out of Wazoo. He's a safety, but he's like a slot safety, so he's kind of a hybrid safety corner who would be... basically somebody that would have a similar... Basically, it's what you got when you drafted Will Harris. So if you're targeting him, you probably are... You wasted the Will Harris pick, right? And I don't think that they're necessarily willing to move on from Will Harris at this point. I think they've invested for him. They're ready to work with him. And Thompson is a good player, but... I think you already have your version of him. So he's the only guy. Risden wrote an article on him at Lions Wire, and so we'll link to it. But he's the big name that they're going to invest in. I fully expect the Lions to do what they've done in the past and
pass
on everybody.
Note to everybody listening that the supplemental draft, if you draft a player in the third round of the supplemental draft, you lose your third round pick in the next draft.
Yep.
In the main draft, not the supplemental draft. All right, next question is from One Pride. What has to happen in the NFC North, including the Lions, so Detroit will make it to the playoffs? It's my favorite section of the questions, where we start going off the rails a little slightly.
So, okay, the Bears won the division. So what
they can have some regression.
The Bears would basically need to not be 100% healthy like they were last season. Last season they were 100% healthy. They would have to have the injury bug hit them just like the injury bug hit the other three teams.
Yeah, but they're a candidate for regression even if everybody remains healthy.
They also had defensive touchdowns, lots of turnovers. They were number one defense in the league. That's not always...
Have a killer playoff loss. So yeah. that mentally affects the team for the next season.
Yeah, and the types of areas in which the Bears won last year are not statistical categories that are sustainable. So there's a definite option for the Bears to regress. So right off the bat, right there, the Bears can regress. It's very easy for that to happen. Minnesota.
Vikings, Kirk Cousins has to just remain quarterback for all season. Because they're not going to go 12-4 with them there. I mean, and I like Kirk Cousins. You know, I'm a Spartan.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think for me, the Vikings didn't improve their roster as much as the other teams in the NFC North. And so they seemed to take a step back last year. It's possible they take another step back. I could also see them turning around and taking a step forward. But like you said, with Kirk Cousins, it's really a big kind of crapshoot with them. Like, they could move forward or back. With the Packers, we'll go right back to that first question that we had, right? Their defense is susceptible. And if Rodgers doesn't mesh well with this new coach, which seems to have some friction already for some reason.
Excited for the friction.
And then the defense struggles, the Packers could end up having a hard time. And so you can see ways for all three of these teams to really go in the wrong direction.
So everybody's got to turn their key in the same direction at the same time. And then the Lions can make the playoffs.
Well, and then the Lions need to have things happen to them like what happened to the Bears last season. You need to stay healthy.
Oof. That's not going to happen.
Unfortunately, it doesn't across the league. Yeah, well, not traditional for most teams. It happens. You need to stay as healthy as you can. You need to be able to control the ball that they want to control the ball. And the defense needs to take a next step forward. And if they can control the ball with the running game on offense, they can have a good, solid, or better than solid top 10 level defense, then, which it appears that they've added players to do, you know, you can have more success. And a lot of those games that you were losing, you can now win. The Dallas game, the San Francisco game, there were games last year that turned. And you can point to a specific part where it went the wrong way for the Lions. If those breaks turn the other way, now this team has an easier path. And so, there's a way, but you know, you got to have breaks in both directions, I guess.
All right. Trying to have hope if they have another bad season, what are the chances they move on from Quinn and Patricia?
I don't think it would be this year.
Yeah, they got another year. Chances are low. Yeah. The only way it's very remote that they get rid of Quinn. They can get rid of Patricia if some of that old stuff starts flaring up again for whatever reason and they have a very bad season. Mm-hmm. Then I could see that they're put in a position to get rid of them.
It takes time to turn over a roster to get it to match the coaching staff that you want.
We're Detroit fans. We know that.
We see it all the time.
We've been told that every sport.
And if they want things
are going poorly.
No, but if they want to cut bait, the entire defense as you know it would be have to be scrapped, right? It just would be scrapped. So I think they're going to give them at least 3 years. Because I don't even know.
Because they haven't gone 4-12. Yeah,
they both got 5-year contracts, and they're 1 year into a 5-year contract.
Yeah,
right?
I know. Oh, yeah.
Right? And I also don't know if they do move on from Patricia this year, let's say he has a bad year and they do move on, like you're saying, I don't think they could leave Quinn. Because if they leave Quinn, now you're saying, okay, you got another 3 years to work with the coach. So in my mind, very low chances of it happening after this season, regardless of what happens. We'll talk a year from now and see where we're at.
Yeah, sadly, if things go terribly awry, they're still not going anywhere.
Yeah, I think we're here for a while.
All right. Amorellian. Is that right?
I think
Amorellian?
So.
Amorellian? All right. Wide receiver, running back, offensive tackle, cornerback for 2020 draft needs. Every team, every year, requires a cornerback.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's still probably one of the bigger holes on the roster is who's that outside corner to. So you got to look at that. If they don't come to an agreement with Darius Slay, you could be in the same situation with Darius Slay next year. So cornerback would be high on the list for that. With tackle, I don't think it's as pressing because you have Decker on an extension. You have Crosby in the fold. You have Rick Wagner for a couple years. I'm not as concerned about tackle. I would be concerned about guard instead. especially if this whole Wiggins, Aboushe, Joe Dahl experiment doesn't pan out the way that they want. So I do think you could look at an offensive lineman. I do think a corner makes sense. You know, if you don't extend A'shaun Robinson, you're going to need some depth on the defensive line. If C.J. Anderson doesn't work out.
Well, I was going to say, right? Whether or not C.J. Anderson works out, I could see running back being a focus of need. And definitely wide receiver, because I don't know, Marvin Jones is fine, but he's not really good.
You know, and you don't have a lot behind him, and he's only got a year left on his contract after that, so receiver's going to be up there. So, yeah, you got a couple spots on offense that are obvious, a couple spots on defense that are obvious. I mean, the rest of them seem to be okay. I would say possibly running back, receiver, guard, possibly defensive tackle, corner for sure.
All right, last question from Gary Luke. Well, we're going to have to make this quick. What is your earliest Lions memory, and who's your first favorite player, favorite spelled with OU? Gary's one of our favorite international listeners.
Yes. First memory.
This is a tough one for me, too. The like my first memory that's really clear is also my worst memory. Because Sterling Sharp catching the 40-plus-yard TD pass in the playoff game.
So
91, I was 9 years old, and I probably was watching the games, but I don't have, like, really strong memories from those games. Now, 92, I don't... Like, the big memory for me for 92 is the comeback, the Frank Reich comeback over the Oilers. So it wasn't even a Lions memory. And I also remember the missed field goal. Because I think that's it. And I say I could be told that could have been a blowout by the Cowboys. I'm getting everything confused now. But yeah, 93, the strongest memory was the playoff game, even though I know I closely followed every game that season. I guess I bought all the magazines and I knew the roster inside and out at that time. So I guess that's my earliest Lions memory. My favorite player, can't go any further, it's Barry Sanders, because I was 9, 10 years old when, I was 7 when he got into the league, so spent my whole formative youth watching him. So I would say easily my favorite Lions player.
I'd say I could probably go back before 89 and think of something, but it doesn't stand out like the 89 draft did to me. I was a big college... I liked college quite a bit.
Have switched over the years, even though we didn't know each other. Right. You were a big college fan at the beginning, now you're a pro man.
Yeah.
Whereas I was a huge pro fan, and then when I went away to college, I kind of became a much bigger college football fan.
Well, I was very into Michigan and USC. And in the 89 season, Michigan played USC in the Rose Bowl. Rodney Peete was the quarterback. And in this 89 draft, when they drafted Barry Sanders in the first round, that was the one that I think, everyone was like, they understood it. But Rodney Peete was drafted late. And that's what really drew my attention. I was like, here's a guy that I liked in college. I liked at USC. And the Lions drafted him. But they drafted him late. And I'm like, he was such a good college quarterback. Why did he get drafted late? That piqued my interest in the NFL draft. Then that got me watching the Lions a lot more than I had been occasionally. So the first, vivid memory is probably that 1989 draft when the Barry came in. I can remember things before that, but that was the big one. And favorite player? Yeah. I mean, Barry. I mean, he's just... How do you not
go with
Barry?
He was in our wheelhouse as far as age goes.
Right. I mean, I was a huge Herman Moore fan because I played wide receiver when I was younger. And so I liked that. So I associated that. I was nowhere even close to his frame. But I liked that about him. I liked Benny Blades because he would lay the wood right back.
Spielman.
Then, right? So, yeah, well, of course.
Okay, now we're headed down a rabbit hole, and we are running out of time.
But, yeah, all right. We'll stick with Barry. That's the obvious answer, right?
All right. So, shout outs, Eric. We were at 195 reviews last week, and this week we have...
Still at 195.
And that's okay. Yeah. We really appreciate you all listening. And if you guys haven't had a chance to give us a rating, but would like to, hey, go ahead and give us a rating. We'd really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's the summer months, so we're not totally surprised, right? This is probably not
our most listened to episodes.
Right.
But if you are listening, thanks for listening. Next week, we're going to talk about the defense a little bit, much similar as to last week as far as the structure of the podcast goes, although we likely won't have a guest.
Right.
So until that time, let's go Lions. Mm-hmm.